VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. The father of the Turkish-American activist killed by Israeli soldiers in the occupied West Bank last week welcomed on Thursday Turkey's decision to initiate an independent investigation into her death and called on the United States to do the same. VOA White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wadakuswar.
Turkey blames Israel and announced its own probe into the death of Ayşenur Eşge Ege, a Turkish-American activist who was killed by Israeli forces last week while protesting settlements in the occupied West Bank. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan.
We will take every legal step to ensure that the blood of our Ayşenur Eşge Ege does not remain on the ground.
Israel's campaign in Gaza has continued for 11 months despite U.S. pressure for parties to reach a ceasefire in return for the release of hostages held by Hamas. Patsy Wadakuswara, VOA News at the White House.
United States Speaker of the House Mike Johnson has found himself at a crossroads in regards to keeping the U.S. government funded. VOA's Christina Benenti.
A senior House Republican urged his party on Thursday to begin negotiations with Democrats on government funding beyond the September 30th deadline. This comes after Speaker Mike Johnson canceled a vote on a bill to extend funding until March 2025, which included a citizenship proof requirement for voter registration. Democrats and moderate Republicans opposed it. The former arguing the measure was unnecessary since non-citizens are already barred from voting in federal elections. Democratic House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries told reporters on Thursday that he had a brief conversation with Johnson the day before about finding a path forward, but declined to share details. Christina Menenti, VOA News.
North Korea has offered a rare glimpse into a secretive facility to produce nuclear weapons and materials, as it says Leader Kim Jong-un visited the area and called for stronger efforts to increase his nuclear weapons. This is VOA News. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is wrapping up a three-nation Ukraine-focused European tour in Poland after hearing repeated appeals from Ukrainian officials to use Western-supplied weaponry for long-range strikes inside Russia. Blinken traveled to Warsaw on Thursday after spending a day in Kyiv with British Foreign Ministry or Foreign Secretary David Lammy, during which they pledged to bring the Ukrainian request to their leaders. President Joe Biden and British Prime Minister Keir Starmer are to meet in the United States on Friday amid signs both Washington and London are growing more receptive to allowing the Ukrainians to use their arms to hit targets farther inside Russia than previously okayed. NATO member Poland, which shares a border with Ukraine, has been supportive of the Ukrainians' request. AP correspondent Lisa Dwyer reports there was a flurry of bills concerning China passed by the U.S. House this week.
The efforts would ban Chinese-made drones, limit China-linked biotech companies from access to U.S. markets, strengthen sanctions, and deepen ties with Asian countries. The campaign to target Beijing this week shows how curbing China's power has emerged as a rare issue of political consensus. Some measures did pass along party lines, with Republicans arguing the need to protect national security, Democrats raising concerns about discrimination. One contentious measure seeks to revive a Trump-era program to root out Beijing's spying in American universities and institutes. All of those bills do still need Senate approval. I'm Lisa Dwyer.
U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris campaigned in a swing state Thursday and called for another debate with former U.S. President Donald Trump. AP correspondent Sagar Magani.
At a North Carolina rally, Harris noted this week's debate with Donald Trump.
And I believe we owe it to the voters to have another debate.
Minutes earlier, Trump rejected another matchup, writing on social media, there will be no third debate after this week's and his June showdown with President Biden. Trump suggests a prize fighter who loses the bout is always the one calling for a rematch. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Nearly 200 people have died in Vietnam in the aftermath of Typhoon Yagi, and 128 remain missing as flash floods and landslides take their toll. Vietnam's VNE Express newspaper reported Thursday that 199 people have died while more than 800 have been injured. In the capital, floodwaters from the Red River receded slightly, but many areas were still inundated with water neck high in some places. The death toll spiked earlier in the week as a flash flood swept away the entire hamlet of Lang Nhu in northern Vietnam's Lao Cai province through Tuesday. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Russian President Vladimir Putin threatens the West, don't let Ukraine use long-range weapons.
Vladimir Putin made the most declaratory threat of war against the United States and Europe that he has made in his entire career. That cannot be overestimated.
Botswana is increasing MPOX surveillance at the country's entry points.
The initiative by the Minister of Health is a very welcome development.
And the first private spacewalk takes place above the Earth.
Astronauts aboard a SpaceX capsule in orbit on Thursday opened the vehicle's hatch, and two crew members emerged into the vacuum of space.
Today is Friday, September 13th.
And this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Scott Walterman.
And I'm Alexis Strope.
Russian President Vladimir Putin saying if the West allows Ukraine to use Western long-range weapons against Russia, then this will mean that NATO countries and the United States and European countries are fighting Russia. In some of his most hawkish comments on the subject yet, Putin said such a move would drag the country supplying Kyiv with long-range weapons directly into the war, since satellite targeting data and the actual programming of the missiles, the flight paths, would have to be done by NATO military personnel because Kyiv doesn't have the capability itself. The New York Times is reporting that U.S. President Joe Biden appears on the verge of clearing the way for Ukraine to launch long-range Western weapons deep inside Russian territory as long as it doesn't use arms provided by the United States. That's coming from sources in Europe. The issue, which has long been debated by the White House, is coming to a head Friday with the first visit to Washington by Britain's new Prime Minister, Keir Starmer. So let's dig into this. Joining us to talk about it is Daniel Davis with Defense Priorities in Washington. He retired from the U.S. Army as a lieutenant colonel after 21 years of active service. So thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us about this.
You bet.
So the meeting earlier this week, Ukraine again asked Great Britain and the United States to let them use some of these long-range missiles to hit targets deeper inside Russia. That's going to most likely be discussed today when President Biden meets with the British Prime Minister. What is the effect that this would have, do you think? I know that they're worried about escalation.
Yeah, they need to be worried about escalation. This needs to be a hard no. We need to stop the discussion, stop the even contemplation of it. There is no upside, and there is a massive downside. Because on Thursday afternoon, Vladimir Putin made the most declaratory threat of war against the United States and Europe that he has made in his entire career. That cannot be overestimated, how serious this is from the Russian side, because they said if these weapons are used, they said they can only be used with the satellite guidance systems from the West, with the technical capabilities of people from the West. You can't just train Ukrainians how to use this. Ergo, they count, in their view, it will mean the direct participation of the United States and Europe in the war, and they will take appropriate measures, because he expressly used the term, this would mean they are at war with us, and we will take appropriate measures. And listen, I know a lot of people say, yeah, but Putin has made a lot of threats over the years, and he's done lots of posturing, et cetera, but then nothing ever happens. You know, like whether it was with the Abrams or whether it was Patriots or the F-16s, anything. They always said, gave all these warnings, but then nothing ever happened. This is fundamentally different. Number one, it's on top of all these other things that have happened. But it's secondly, he has never expressly said, we will take direct countermeasures against you, because this will mean you are directly in the war. And they have the means to do it. I don't think a lot of people realize that. I think there's too much belief in the West that, oh, Russia's this, you know, slow, ponderous force. It's, you know, had all it could handle with one Ukraine, and they would never dare to take on NATO because it's so much more powerful. They would be destroyed. But that's not the case. Russia has very quietly become much more powerful than they were in February of 2022. We wanted them to be weakened by the war, but as a result of it staying dragging on, now that they have recovered from all their losses and now that they have increased their power in so many different places, not the least of which is experienced men in fighting modern warfare, which none of our troops have, I'll point that out. And now then they have increased their industrial capacity like nothing had we even seen in the world since World War II on an industrial scale like this. And we're talking all these categories of glide bombs, the hypersonic missiles, and, of course, millions of rounds of artillery of various calibers. And then now then lots of trained men, and they're also producing more and more armored vehicles and bringing them up to standard with modern stuff, et cetera. So everything in the world says that Russia means this, and we would it would be foolish for us to risk war by allowing long-range weapons to be used in Ukraine. And let me just before, you know, I pause here, let me point out that even if you thought Russia was bluffing, these things aren't going to do anything to change the outcome of the war. We don't have that many long-range missiles, first of all. Russia does have a robust anti-aircraft capability, anti-missile capability, and for sure would shoot down probably quite a few of these long-range missiles anyway. And Russia's so big that it could absorb this. I mean, it's expected that you're going to lose assets during war, and you don't have to look any further than to see how badly Ukraine has been pummeled with long-range weapons throughout this war, and they're still in it. It hasn't knocked them out after 2.5 years of virtually unlimited Russian capacity to strike throughout Russia, Ukraine. So it's not going to change the war. It's not going to help Ukraine, but it might get us drawn in. So it should be a hard no.
What would that look like, do you think, if we get drawn in? I mean, if they declare war.
Look, it could be everything. They're certainly not desiring to go to war with us. So it's not like they're going to, you know, roll a bunch of divisions into Poland or something like that right away. But they may, almost certainly would, attack the facilities in neighboring NATO countries where some of these things are coming from. Or they would target specific military targets in Romania or Poland or the Baltics, et cetera. And who knows how much further they could go. But that's probably where it would start, that they would actually hit airfields, military supplies, arms depots, especially those on the Polish side, et cetera. And then we're faced with, okay, are you going to do an Article 5 now, and are you ready to go to war? Because Russia has been incredibly overt by saying, and again as recently as yesterday with Lavrov, we have updated our doctrine for nuclear weapons use. And they know they can't go toe-to-toe with all of NATO because the numbers are just too big. So what does anybody think that they're going to resort to next? And we just had Burns, the CIA director, with the MI6 guy, admit that in the early part – the later part of 2022, Russia came close to using tactical nuclear weapons when they thought that they were losing a little bit on the tactical level to Ukraine. Now, imagine what they would do if they started going toe-to-toe and the NATO side started going to war in a big way with them. Of course it would go nuclear. There's no question that it would go nuclear. It's foolish of the highest order to even play with this kind of stuff.
I think, you know, you keep mentioning Poland. I think they today endorsed the concept of allowing Ukraine to use the weapons.
Yeah, they have. They've been trying to provoke this from the beginning. I mean, they have a real enduring hatred of Russia, and they're willing to do it. I mean, they're willing to take these risks. I'm not, nor should the United States. I cannot overestimate how absurd and just destructive it would be for us to have any chance of getting drawn into a nuclear conflict in any degree with Russia. There's nothing at stake for American national security, and this would only just thrust us into a place to where our literal existence could come into question.
Thank you so much for the time and the perspective.
You bet.
Daniel Davis with Defense Priorities.
Poland, which is in favor of allowing Ukraine to use the weapons, is accusing Russia of orchestrating a campaign of arson, sabotage, and cyber attacks. Furthermore, it has accused Russia and its ally Belarus of orchestrating a migrant crisis on its eastern border. Here is the Polish Foreign Minister, Radoslaw Sikorski.
We, of course, reserve the right to protect our territory and our citizens. And I can tell you that if another arson hurts a Polish citizen, Poland will take bilateral countermeasures that the Russian Federation will notice.
Back in Ukraine, three staff members of the International Committee of the Red Cross were killed on Thursday when shelling struck a site intended for frontline aid distribution. The ICRC said in a post on X that two additional staff members were wounded.
Botswana and an American biotech firm, Ginkgo Bioworks, have partnered to conduct pathogen surveillance at the country's entry points. Health officials say the proactive move is meant to safeguard public health as the world faces emerging disease threats. Steve Miller narrates this story by Umangase Dube.
Botswana introduced Mpox screening last month for travelers at its entry points. In a statement Wednesday, Ministry of Health spokesperson Christopher Nyaga said a pathogen monitoring program is critical to detecting similar emerging health threats.
In a proactive effort to safeguard public health, the Ministry of Health, in collaboration with Ginkgo Bioworks LLC, will on 16 September 2024 introduce a pathogen monitoring program in certain ports of entry. This new initiative is part of government's efforts to strengthen detection of new and emerging public health threats across Botswana's borders.
Dr. Mbachi Mazwiduma, a public health expert, says the pathogen surveillance program will complement existing strategies to prevent disease threats.
The initiative by the Ministry of Health is a very welcome development, in the sense that at least it is demonstrating that they are both embracing traditional methods of surveillance and disease detection, plus at the same time they are looking at other innovative ways of disease detection.
Through the collaboration, Boston-based Ginkgo Bioworks will work with the Ministry of Health to collect and monitor travelers' samples. Nasal swabs will be used to collect the samples. Nyaga says testing will be done on a voluntary, anonymous basis.
Although participation in this initiative is entirely voluntary, travelers are encouraged to participate because this early detection of pathogens is meant to safeguard the health of all citizens, visitors, and residents of this country. The samples collected will be kept anonymous. The data collected from the samples will be vital in strengthening the country's robust health system and response to public health threats and emergencies.
But Mazwiduma says voluntary participation in the pathogen monitoring program could hinder effective disease detection.
Perhaps if it is non-invasive and non-intrusive, then the technique should be compulsory, because at least it ensures that the number of people who comply to sample acquisition is increased, and therefore you can actually rapidly achieve suitable sample sizes for you to be able to ensure that, number one, you don't miss any patients, but also more importantly that it allows you to improve your validation of these particular technologies.
Botswana and Ginkgo Bioworks previously collaborated in a 2022 pathogen monitoring program to detect new and emerging COVID-19 variants. During the same year, Botswana was credited with the discovery of COVID-19 variant Omicron. For Umkandasi Dube, I'm Steve Miller, VOA News.
We're following these other stories from around the world.
The UN is cutting back its activities in Yemen in response to a crackdown by Houthi rebels on staff working for the UN. The UN has narrowed its focus to essential life-saving and life-sustaining activities and is deprioritizing broader activities to develop the Arab world's poorest nation.
The Biden administration said on Thursday it was imposing sanctions on 16 allies of Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro in response to widespread voter fraud in the country's election and his government's crackdown on the political opposition.
President Bassirou Diomaye Faye of Senegal has dissolved the opposition-dominated parliament, paving the way for a snap legislative election. The new election has to take place within the next 90 days, according to the country's constitution. Analysts say that Faye's political party, PASTEF, has a high chance of securing a majority, given his popularity and his victory margin in the presidential election.
In our continuing coverage of the U.S. presidential election, the race between candidates Kamala Harris and Donald Trump remains tight. But Harris has opened a sizable lead over Trump among one group of voters, women, who vote at higher rates than men. As VOA's Dora McQuar reports, Harris's late entry into the race widened the political party's gender gap.
Since 1984, more women than men have voted in U.S. presidential elections. And, for the most part, more of them vote for Democrats than vote for Republicans. Vice President Kamala Harris's sudden entry into the race, following President Joe Biden's July withdrawal, appears to have fired up this voting bloc. Erin Covey is with the Cook Political Report.
We have seen a pretty significant shift across a lot of different demographics, but with women in particular, who are now much more likely to vote for the Democrat at the top of the ticket than they were when it was Biden.
This election year, roughly one in five women say abortion rights is their key issue. In 2022, Supreme Court justices nominated by then-President Donald Trump helped eliminate constitutional rights to an abortion. Trump wants each state to decide abortion laws. Harris wants federal legislation to protect reproductive freedom nationwide. That is why these voters say they're backing Harris.
She's trying to create a world where people all have their rights to their own decisions, their bodies, their choices, women's rights.
She's for the people, which is the middle class, which I am middle class. And the laws about women's rights.
Among female voters, the latest poll suggests that Harris leads Trump by anywhere from 9 to 13 points.
Paul Maslin is a pollster with FM3, a public opinion research firm.
She gained a lot of younger women who, independents, nonpartisan voters under the age of 50, many of them under 40, who really got excited by her candidacy.
Here's Erin Covey.
Black women are a lot more likely to vote for Harris now, Hispanic women. So, you know, as we've seen her do better with a lot of these specific racial demographics or educational demographics, we have seen with women that is really where that shift is coming from.
Male voters favor Trump by anywhere from 5 to 9 points, depending on the poll. These Trump supporters are from Georgia and Montana.
First, her being the candidate, this is like horrific to me because, first of all, she's not prepared to be president.
For months, we would barely ever see Joe Biden, and all of a sudden, Kamala Harris is the nominee for the Democratic Party when she was never nominated in the first place. She came out of nowhere.
The gender gap persists among younger voters in Gen Z, where a majority of men under the age of 27 favor Trump, according to pollster David McLennan of Meredith College.
There has been an increase in terms of the admiration of some Gen Z young men for, you know, swagger. It's very much a macho punch him in the face kind of thing.
McLennan says young men are politically socialized by online sources, where they often see and hear unflattering opinions about female leaders.
So they believe that women can't make the tough decisions if the United States were to go to war or face international crisis. They don't believe that women have the ability to make the tough call.
White women were key to Trump's victory in 2016. He also won a majority of white women in 2020. In this race, the latest polls show Harris and Trump statistically tied among white women. Dora McQuar, VOA News, Washington.
A U.S. Marine Corps general who commands forces in Africa says stability and support programs for Somalia are in the works as the country prepares for the withdrawal of African Union troops in December. VOA's Nairobi Bureau Chief Mariama Diallo reports.
U.S. Marine Corps General Michael Langley, head of U.S. Africa Command, said that after meeting with Somali President Hassan Sheikh Mohamud and his top military general, Major General Ibrahim Sheikh Muhyiddin Addo, this past weekend, he's confident the country can manage its own security after the December withdrawal of the African Union Transitional Mission in Somalia, known as ATMIS. Langley's remarks in a virtual briefing to reporters Thursday came 2.5 years after the multidimensional mission was authorized by the UN Security Council, in part to help stabilize the country following years of insurgency by the militant group Al-Shabaab. General Langley says that Somali authorities have told him military operations in the southern and central parts of the country are focused on liberating some areas from the militants and stabilizing others.
Their operations are ebbing and flowing because I'll just use some of their narratives. Yes, they have a young army. It's a building army. So there are some successes and some setbacks. But I think the morale across the forces is building, and they're very enthusiastic that they're going to be able to keep Al-Shabaab back on their heels going forward in future operations.
In a briefing to the Security Council in June, Mohamed El Amin Swef, head of ATMIS, told the council that the threat posed by Al-Shabaab remains unpredictable, citing a recent attack on Somali security forces in the Galmudug region and a mortar attack on the ATMIS camp in Baidoa. He says the group still retains the ability to conduct devastating assaults. He said that although Somali forces supported by ATMIS have achieved significant gains in the fight against Al-Shabaab, support from international partners is essential to maintain the momentum. General Langley says the way forward on security cooperation across the Sahel is still to be determined, but add that the U.S. forces will stay engaged.
In the interim, yes, we are pivoting to some degree of like-minded countries with democratic values and shared objectives and shared challenges across coastal West Africa. So, yes, we're in talks with Cote d'Ivoire, in talks with Ghana and Benin as well, as we start to reset and recalibrate some of our assets.
He says those countries are facing threats from terrorist groups like Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb, ISIS West Africa, and others. The groups, which initially operated in Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger, are now moving toward other countries across the region. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
International Edition continues. I'm Scott Walterman.
And I'm Alexis Strope. The United States announced sanctions on Thursday on Cambodian businessman and ruling party Senator Lee Yong Phat, as well as several entities over alleged abuses related to workers who were trafficked and forced to work in online scam centers. The move comes at a delicate phase in relations between the United States and Cambodia, which has moved ever closer to Washington's strategic rival, China, despite U.S. efforts to woo its new leader, Hun Manet, son of longtime strongman Hun Sen.
And finally, cheers erupt in the SpaceX Command Center as billionaire Jared Isaacman exited the Crew Dragon capsule into the vacuum of space, becoming the world's first private spacewalker.
Back at home, we all have a lot of work to do, but from here, Earth sure looks like a perfect world.
Isaacman was followed by SpaceX engineer Sarah Gillis.
All right, stepping into Test Matrix 1 for single-handed mobility.
Before this, only government astronauts with several years of training have done spacewalks.
Really cool to see one of our own out there. That's awesome.
The mission appeared to successfully test trailblazing equipment, including slim spacesuits, and a process to fully depressurize the Crew Dragon cabin. And it was one of the riskiest yet for Elon Musk's space company, the only private firm capable of routinely sending humans to and from Earth's orbit. Isaac Min, the 41-year-old founder of an electronics company called Shift 4, is bankrolling the mission. It's his second trip to orbit with SpaceX. He has declined to say how much he's paying, but the missions are likely to cost hundreds of millions of dollars.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America.
On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thank you so much for being with us.
For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com.
In Washington, with Alexis Strope, I'm Scott Walterman.